The EMS Educast is a podcast by and for EMS educators. Every week, our panel of education experts hosts a program that brings you the latest and greatest in EMS education technology, methods, and techniques. Your hosts will regularly bring you guests from all over the world to tell you about innovative EMS education programs and experiences in other places. Join us each week for the EMS Educast. And visit www.emseducast.com to subscribe with iTunes or the RSS feed, listen to archived shows, and view future show descriptions. The EMS Educast.
Welcome back to the EMS Educast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Greg Fries. I'm really excited that you're listening to the show. As always, this topic for tonight about bullying and adult education is a topic that came to I had this thought or idea back in the fall of 2010, and just really excited that we've brought together this group of people tonight to have this conversation. I'll have our two guests, Art Sia and Catherine Matisse, introduce themselves in just a moment, but first want to welcome back a good friend and co-host, Rob Terrio.
Hey, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. It's exciting to always have this conversation each week. And Bill, how are you?
I'm well, and it's good to be here and to be talking with both of you and our guests tonight, and I'm looking forward to what I have to learn.
Great. Thanks, Bill. And welcoming back to the EMS Educast, I believe for a second appearance, we'll have to search the archives to see if it isn't three, but our good friend Art Sia. Welcome back, Art.
Hi, Greg. It is my second time, and thanks again for the invite to be on the show. Like Bill, I'm looking forward to listening to some expert advice about tonight's topic.
And I'm
from the San Francisco Paramedic Association, where I'm the chief executive officer.
Wonderful. Thanks for being back, Art. And finally, Catherine Matisse, welcome to the EMS Educast. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Maybe you could just start off by introducing yourself a bit to our listeners and the work you do, and to sort of set the deck for the evening.
Sure. I am the president of Civility Partners, LLC. Civility Partners is a consulting firm that focuses on building positive workplaces. And so we do training and consulting both in those areas. And then me personally am a expert in workplace bullying. I also have bullies.com, and that's a website for educational purposes. And I've been researching and consulting and training in the area for a hot topic right now.
Well, and a hot topic for a long time that I certainly remember bullying as childhood, and at this late 80s, early 90s, when we were trying to say goodbye to hazing, and nonetheless, it persists through the ages. And I'm wondering if it might just be a quick put definition to bullying.
Sure. There's a few concepts there. Thing is, basically, I'll give you the long version, and then we'll kind of break it down. Bullying is perpetual and systemic aggressive communication, manipulation, and humiliation. And those acts and those communication behaviors result in psychological damage for both witnesses and targets of those behaviors, and ultimately that causes some issues for the bottom line. So just to kind of break that down, for one, bullying definitely is recurring and perpetual. We're not talking about the one-off incident where somebody, got upset. This is something that lasts for quite a long time, sometimes even 3 or 4 or 5 years. Also, these acts are obviously very negative. They're aggressive. We're talking about manipulation. We're talking about humiliation, where one individual is really focused on sort of taking down either one or more people that they work with. And ultimately, these behaviors really cause a lot of psychological damage for anybody around, and most certainly targets. And the research is pretty clear that bullying can cause things like stress, anxiety, depression. Unfortunately, there's stories of people committing suicide because of their situation at work. And then the final concept is ultimately this creates a major power imbalance between the target and the bully that's unhealthy. Obviously, in a workplace, there's power imbalance between a subordinate and a superior, and that's healthy and normal. But when that power imbalance gets to a point where an individual is feeling so abused and so anxious and so depressed that it's affecting the way that they work, that's unhealthy power imbalance. So, again, the four concepts are that it's recurring, it's negative aggressive acts, it's causing psychological damage to targets and witnesses, and that there's this severe power imbalance that's unhealthy.
And how common is this in EMT schools or paramedic schools?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question specifically in terms of your industry. I don't know of any research that's been conducted specifically in that industry, but I can tell you that research from around the world for the last 25 years continues to point to 50% of the workforce, 70% of the workforce, somewhere in there is being bullied or is bullied at some point in their working life. So whenever there's research on how many people are experiencing this, it seems to always show up somewhere between those numbers, between 50 and 70%. So I would imagine that number, falls right in there in your industry.
I imagine that, especially in training programs that are attached specifically toward departments, for example, a department-based EMT training program, for example, where employment may be predicated on successful passing of the course. And Catherine sort of mentioned this from the power perspective, when you have that deck stacked against you, there can be at times where hazing from instructors, what we would call hazing and what some organizations would say was just simply organizational behavior to help new recruits conform. In those type of situations, I think that type of behavior really comes out very strongly. And sometimes to the detriment of folks who are trying to get into their chosen employment.
Art, have you seen this in your experience?
Sure, absolutely. It's insidious from the viewpoint of it's a department mindset that in a paramilitary organization that people need to follow rules and orders, and there's some maybe bleed over from the pure military side, but even in the military side of even on the military side, I think that there have been some changes made to try to reduce in trying to incorporate leader followership behavior and trying to separate that out from just simply hazing or bullying type behavior.
Catherine, do you think that sort of increased attention or scrutiny, whether it be in a classroom or a workplace to bullying, does it just cause the sort of bullying behaviors to go sort of further on the down low, or does it curb the behaviors?
I think it depends on the organization's performance management and how much they're paying attention to it. So there's two ways an organization could go about scrutinizing whether or not there's bullying going on, is to maybe just come out and say, hey, we're not going to tolerate this kind of behavior, which would probably drive it into more under-the-radar behaviors, which, by the way, bullying is often very under-the-radar anyway. We're talking about things like sabotaging someone's work or taking responsibilities away from someone that are really important to that person's job so that that person feels like, what do I need to be here for? They're taking away important things to me. So it's already under the radar. But if an organization comes out and says, we're not going to handle or deal with or allow workplace bullying, and then they react when somebody is bullying, then the rest of the organization will start to see that there's going to be action taken. So I think it depends on how the organization goes about making this announcement that they're not going to tolerate bullying and whether or not they actually follow through with that statement and what they put in place to help ensure that there isn't bullying going on.
Catherine, this is Bill. I
I would like to just back up here a little bit. You mentioned within the literature, what kind of literature does this subject matter show up? Social science, psychology, where would someone find the roots of the research into this particular area of, you know, hazing, bullying, and is your particular experience within the workplace or within educational institutions, whether it be K-12 or higher education?
Okay, two parts. So the first question was, where would you find some of this literature? It's everywhere. It's in social psychology. It's in management. It's in communication. It's in human relations. It's in human resources. It's in journals of personality. There's a journal called Aggressive Behavior that publishes a lot on it. Management studies. You know, so it is across the board in a lot of different areas, and you can find research in any of those subjects. And then in terms of where I've been, it's everywhere. It's not just in the educational system. You know, it's in any organization could potentially have it. Education does get a bad rap in bullying. It seems that education does seem to be kind of an industry that where bullying really is prevalent. And I think there's some cultural things there. You know, you get a lot of people in a organization that are extremely smart. You know, they know what they're doing. They can find it difficult to relax and work together. So any place where there's bureaucracy, there is going to probably be workplace bullying. So education, government organizations, those are the places where it seems to be pretty prevalent. But any industry or any organization is open to having workplace bullying if they're not putting it out there that they're not going to tolerate that kind of behavior.
I'm sorry, just one more question. How did you develop your background and expertise in this area? I think educators are, at least in general, particularly people that are getting into education, are always interested in how someone goes from, hey, this interests me, and over time grows into being a subject matter expert in the area.
Sure. I was a human resources manager at a nonprofit here in San Diego, and we definitely had a bully there. And this person was my peer, and he and I both reported directly to the president. We both were director level. We both had departments that we were managing. And as a human resources manager, not only did he and I have a lot of interpersonal issues, but I also dealt with a lot of the issues that he was creating within his department. So a lot of turnover. I spent a lot of time hiring new people because people left as a result of the way he treated them. A lot of counseling targets or people crying in my office. And I spent a lot of time in my boss's office trying to get him to address the behavior. And he just wouldn't. And I think he ultimately was probably a little bit scared of the bully as well and was intimidated by him. I even at one point went in there with an Excel sheet where I laid out all of the costs that this individual, you know, it cost the organization over a period of 6 months or something, including my time spent rehiring people. And he even bullied some of our clients where I had to deal with their customer complaints because of the way they had been treated. While all that was going on, I was getting my master's degree at San Diego State and came across this idea of workplace bullying and just went from there. I was amazed at the research that I was reading and how much it coincided with my own experiences. So since then, I've just been, you know, made a business out of it and have maintained researching and publishing and all that kind of stuff.
Interesting, Bill. I just did a search on ERIC, which is the Education Resources Information Center, and just typed in bullying as a keyword, and it came up with 1,800 results. So there's clearly not an extraordinary amount of literature on the subject, but certainly a reasonable amount.
I would think go ahead, Catherine.
Oh, I was just going to say, one thing, too, that I wanted to say is that, unfortunately, although there is all of this research out there, and it has been getting researched for about 25 years, and there are even other countries with laws against workplace bullying, though America is not one of them, A lot of times you find that managers and human resources don't believe that bullying even exists. And so those are going to be the people that don't handle it very well or don't deal with it properly. But it never ceases to amaze me when I do presentations and things out there, you know, at different association meetings and things. There's always people in the audience who just fight me on the fact that this is even a real thing and that it really even exists. So just wanted to put that out there.
I mean, if to pick up on that, I think it's part of it is, I think, from the viewpoint that if it's not clearly codified by either a civil right, disparaging treatment against a protected class, I think some managers are just simply don't want to wade into something that they would just tend to brush off as either a personality clash or just something that is so. Since it's not illegal, that means there's nothing that we can really do about that, other than to just chastise people and just let them go in their way.
Right.
And I think in the classroom it does when it does occur, and you know, and sometimes it's between students. The instructor may have sort of a clear playing field in the student handbook about some things, but that probably tends to still be blocked off in these legal issues of harassment and so forth.
Right.
I think that if you have handbooks that really push out a bit to suggest types of behavior that isn't tolerated, you don't have to call it bullying, but you can certainly define it through the behavior that's observed and then grade it that way, that may help at least identify points where the school would be obligated to take actions on, because they put it in writing that they would.
Right. And some of the states have definitely sort of clamped down more on bullying among students because of some of the incidents that have happened,
maybe Prince
and some of these things. But most of them still don't include adults. So, for example, New Jersey just signed a law on January 6th, making the law is, 30 pages long, all about all of these ridiculous requirements that schools have to do and implement and in order to end bullying, and it never talks about the fact that teachers could be the bully or that students could be bullying adults. It's all student to student. Whereas Nevada has had a law that came into effect last year, actually, that does, it defines bullying, it defines harassment, all this kind of stuff, and then it says that adults are also prohibited from that behavior. So that's a good step in the right direction in terms of workplace bullying.
Catherine, where's the line between bullying and like harassment and bullying and sexual harassment?
Well, harassment and hostile work environments all belong to the protected class. So if you get somebody that we call an equal opportunity bully, then it's not illegal. So if I'm, sexually harassing you, that's covered by law. Or if I'm harassing you because of your religion or your sexual orientation or the color of your skin or because you're disabled, then that's harassment and hostile work environment. But if I am just picking on a certain number of people and there's no rhyme or reason around it, then that's legal, 100%.
Okay.
And I think that at least for our audience, particularly people who are becoming new in EMS education, regardless of how, whether it be first responder training or emergency medical responder training, EMT, advanced EMT, or even paramedic, I think that particularly if you don't have the benefits of being in a school or a large organization, maybe such as a hospital or a healthcare system, you may not have access to the training and expertise that you need to develop to even understand what are the current state and federal laws before you even get into what may be the culture organizational rules and practices. And if you work for a very small organization, you may not even have those in-house type things to provide you with as a guide. So I think taking the opportunity to learn more is very beneficial.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do think that the schools, you know, I think at community colleges and universities, the sort of the more traditional schools, that there is more, there are more resources that are out there for the incoming faculty or incoming instructors. And I know there are at least several schools that I know of, and I think it's probably becoming far more common, is that you're really required to go through that type of training, recognition and management training as a faculty person before you even step foot inside the classroom. I know at least that some of the regional occupation programs that our training program interacts with, our faculty, even if they're just skills instructors, if they are credentialed through the system, they have to sit through training on an annual basis to do recognition and intercession as they need to. When you get into the smaller departments, it is very difficult to find that type of resource. And again, if you're sort of born and raised inside a system, and if the system condones behavior that would conform with hazing, but considers that to be the norm for, you know, inside their classroom or inside their recruit academy, it's very difficult to recognize that what you're doing may, if not legally wrong, certainly doesn't contribute to the psychological welfare of your new employees or your new students. And that's where it's a real challenge, because it just basically feeds on itself. Those students come out, and if they don't ever leave their system, will end up just feeding back into the same system as they return as instructors or become part of the educational system.
Certainly, those behaviors become normal, and therefore there is no second thought about what the results of those behaviors are. And also, when a target is being hazed in an organization where that's okay or condoned or normal, when they do go to complain about it, the human resources person or their manager, whoever they talk to, A, is probably going to have no idea what that person's talking about. They're going to, you know, what is this? What do you mean you're being bullied or whatever? Because to them it's normal, or that person or manager, human resources, not going to really know how to deal with it, where, you know, they're often targets are told, just get over it, or see it, you're the weak link, you know, you're the one who's got some communication problems. And so having a culture where hazing is okay and acceptable is certainly going to make filing a complaint about bullying not a good experience for the person filing.
So Catherine, in your experience, if you have come across an organization like that where it was the organizational norm for that, what triggered, was there a sort of a triggering event or a triggering factor that caused people to back up the car a little bit, back up the bus and go, I wonder what we are doing?
Well, in organizations where behavior like that is normal, there usually would have to be some sort of triggering event, like somebody unfortunately committing suicide, or the going postal phrase where they come in and respond that way. Unfortunately, you know, the people who call me, that's not the norm, and the leaders or a manager sees that there's a problem, and they call me to come and help. So the leaders really have to understand that behavior is hurtful to the target, it's hurtful to the witnesses, and it's hurtful to the bottom line ultimately. But I've never gotten a call from an organization where it's normal. You know, there may be some things about the culture that have allowed the bullying to occur and perpetuate, and they're calling me to help out there. But unfortunately, a lot of organizations don't respond properly. You know, we actually have an international association of workplace bullying, and they meet every 2 years around the world. So we were in Europe just this last year, and I was talking with somebody else from Australia, and he told me a story about an organization where over the course of some period of time, maybe 2 or 3 years, they had 4 people come to work and commit suicide by jumping out of the window. And that organization, rather than addressing the cultural issues, they actually put a net up around the outside of the building. So clearly they had no understanding of how to deal with what was happening with their culture, and they really talk about a Band-Aid approach, you know. So in order for bullying to get addressed and get addressed appropriately, leaders really have to be on board with the culture change.
One of the things that's unique about the EMS environment is it's so decentralized, the workplace, that, you know, students spend some time in the classroom, but then they go out to clinical sites, which might be in a hospital or in an ambulance with the fire department or a ambulance service. And then once you're in the workplace, you know, you might spend just a few minutes at your sort of like headquarters building and then spend the next 12 hours with your partner without any supervisor presence. And in I guess other workplaces that maybe have similar sort of like decentralized, you know, is there a like critical mass for number of people that usually are present for bullying to take place? Is it safer or less safer to be in a isolated work environment?
Well, I think in a decentralized organization or setup like that, every section or location is going to have its own culture. And that's where the leaders of that organization would need to make sure that they are being very transparent about their support of not bullying and not hazing. And again, action would definitely have to be taken if somebody does report, hey, at this location I was bullied or I was hazed. The human resources or a manager, whoever, would definitely need to take action very clearly so that everybody can see that action's being taken. So I know that when it's decentralized, managing the culture can be a little bit difficult because of this. Every location has its own culture. But that's still not an excuse. The leaders still need to make sure that they're working on making the culture one that's positive and civil and respectful.
So, Catherine, so if I'm a educator and let's say I don't have the benefits of a potentially a larger organization, I say just potentially, that has some kind of structure in place, what's my own self-inventory I could go through if I was looking in the mirror and say, am in my role, am I a potential bully? What's some things that if I wanted to be self-reflective to think about, let's be really tangible here, that could be, you know, some kind of self-awareness?
Sure, that's a great question. You know, you really want to reflect back on how you spend your day communicating with people. And for somebody, you know, that's bullies obviously don't have communication skills, so that may be a little difficult. But really focusing during your day on how people are reacting to you, paying a lot of attention to facial expressions or the body language of people. So if you walk into a room and people sort of, you know, maybe close in or fold their arms, or you can see that people aren't interested in hanging around you, that might be one indicator. So just thinking, you know, about your interactions and being cognizant of how you're communicating on a regular basis. A lot of times we just sort of communicate. It's like breathing. We just kind of do it. But really being aware of how you communicate. If you felt so inclined, you could certainly ask some people around you and just kind of have a casual conversation about, you know, I just wanted to check in with you on how I'm doing here. You know, how do you feel that our relationship is? Do you feel like I'm good at a manager, or I'm good at my job, or whatever it is, and see if people will be candid with you. They may not be, but that's another way. And just remembering that a collaborative work environment or a respectful work environment is one where you're not passing judgment throughout the day. If you find yourself or catch yourself sort of mentally making fun of people or mentally calling people names or mentally casting judgment on people, that could mean that you're a bully. But bullying is really about, you know, that aggressive communication, and also can be about manipulation. So unfortunately, there are some people who are bullies because they don't realize it and they lack communication skills. And there are indeed some bullies who purposefully make it their mission to take somebody down. So somebody who's purposefully going after another person, that person has probably no chance of really recognizing how damaged their bullying behavior is unless somebody is called in.
I want to give you another scenario, Catherine. It's a Rob here. You're a teacher in a lab setting where you're teaching students some paramedic skills, and you notice that one of the new lab instructors is really speaking in a condescending manner to students and is intimidating them and raising her or his voice at them. So you recognize this, you notice that the students seem to be uncomfortable. You haven't received a complaint from the students. How do you deal with that? Should you approach that person or their superior? Should you do anything about it or just wait till the complaint comes in? What do you suggest?
You know, I would say first off, you know, nobody likes it when you go above their head first chance. Everybody likes a chance to adjust it. So, and also depending on your relationship with that person. But I would say address it with them initially, especially if it's a new instructor, you know, kind of take on that mentoring role a little bit and just talk with them about the fact that students will learn if they're being respected. You know, learning is about mutual respect between the teacher and the students. And so I would certainly have that conversation with them initially and tread lightly, and as in any conversation like that where you're giving feedback, make sure that your feedback is not evaluative, where you're passing judgment and saying, well, you're doing this wrong, this is what's happening. You know, it's got to be very focused on the positive. Here's the stuff that you're doing well, but I just noticed that you're attacking students sometimes, it seems like, and let's make sure that we're not doing that. Students will learn better. And if it doesn't change, then absolutely I would file a complaint and ask
so them to talk to them. What if we altered that scenario a little bit and now it's the new instructor in the lab notices that the senior instructor in the lab is very intimidating and condescending and the students look really scared. Would you take a different approach in that circumstance?
You know, again, it depends on your relationship with that person. If that individual, if you're a new instructor and this individual who's been around for a long time has already sort of taken on a mentor role with you, then absolutely you probably have a little bit of clout with them. And you could say, hey, I noticed that you were upset with your students. What's wrong? What happened? And kind of talk with them about the situation. Again, you want to avoid verbally passing judgment on them. But if that's not the kind of relationship you have and you maybe also fear that instructor, then you may want to address it with their manager and just let them know that that's what you've been noticing.
It's definitely a challenge, I think, Rob, when you're talking in that sort of phrasing it in that type of discussion where the new instructor may feel, may not have the confidence, not only within himself or within the structure of being in that program, to speak up about somebody who, I know a certain situation, actually I know several situations where the instructor is well revered by students and other instructors alike, yet part of that reverence is allows for an oversized personality to sometimes intimidate, make students and instructors uncomfortable. And so in those situations, I have had to deal with instructors who have come up to say, you know, I really like this guy. He's really great. He's really well, clearly well-liked, but I get really uncomfortable when he does X, Y, and Z with the students. And if it's, again, if it's not a clearly illegal behavior, you know, covered by protected class, it does become a headache at the least and a huge challenge at the worst to try to help someone like that understand that for the same reasons why some people would apply accolades also end up hurting folks that will never speak up. They just won't.
Right.
Catherine, is there an inventory tool that exists that, let's say in my role as a coordinator of an education program, that I would want to use give my new instructors sort of a way that they can learn a little bit about themselves? You know, there's learning style inventories. Is there such thing as a bullying index?
There is not a bullying index in terms of you being able to determine if you're a bully. Certainly there's tons of questionnaires out there for the research to determine if other people are being bullied. But that I would say that's where you would want to bring in a consultant who could help you work with people. You could do something like a 360 degree review where, you know, a 360 degree review, if you don't know, is where there's an interview with all of the people around you. So if you're an instructor, maybe your lead faculty and your counselor or whoever else you deal with on a regular basis, those people get interviewed about you and how you behave. And that would be a good way to determine if there are some bullies among you. But there is not an index where we could say, here, take this and find out if you're a bully or not.
I guess I was just thinking about this. Are bullies more often than not conscious of the fact that they're a bully?
You know, the jury is out on that one. When a lot of stuff online that sort of makes me angry sometimes is there is a lot of stuff out there that really does claim that bullies are these horrible people who wake up every morning with their horns on their head and there's a book that even goes so far as to, I think it's called The Sociopath That You Work With or something, you know, and there's a lot of other research out there that says that bullies may not have any idea that that's how they're treating others. You know, for example, I worked with a manufacturing company up in Northern California once, and they called me because they realized that this person was a bully and making a lot of people uncomfortable. And when I interviewed a lot of the people that he worked with just to find out exactly what was happening before I could make recommendations about how to help them and help him. But when I interviewed him, he came in and he sat down and I said, so, you know, I'm here because of you. And he said, yes. And I said, so what's going on? What's happening? And he said, you know, I know that I make people uncomfortable. I know that I made such and such cry, but I honestly have no idea what I'm doing wrong. And the boss keeps telling me, you can't do this. You can't say that. You can't be this way. And he keeps telling me all of these things I can't do. And he's not telling me any of the things I'm supposed to be doing. So clearly that person really just was lacking some communication skills. He was lacking the ability to empathize with others. It doesn't make him a manipulative person. I think he really just didn't know what to do. And he was very passionate about the organization. He had started there as a college intern and had worked his way up to director level over the course of 10 years or something. So he was just really passionate about what the organization was doing and what their goals were. And he would get frustrated when he felt like people were hindering the production of the organization or hindering organizational goals. So the jury's out on that one. There's some people that will say absolutely they're malicious and they're purposeful in what they're doing, and there are others that I don't think are like that at all.
Well, I think I agree with that. I think some people just really have no idea that they're bullying or that they have a certain degree of arrogance that impairs their ability to see that in themselves. We had one instructor, for example, who not only was intimidated the students, but would, on a fairly regular basis, interrupt other instructors and correct them. And it was incredibly frustrating for them. So this was someone who was pulled aside by the dean and spoken to and was quite remorseful and quite shocked, actually, that he was perceived that way. But, you know, even after that event and having some discussion, it continued and for quite some time, I think, because he was just unaware that, you know, the way he framed things or would say things offended people. And in his own mind, they were just normal, natural things to say.
Yeah, and in a situation like that, you can't just say, hey, you're doing this and you need to stop. That person requires coaching over the course of some period of time where they, you know, action coaching, we call it, where they are given some instructions about their behavior and they talk with a coach about their behavior, go out, do some homework around improving their communication, check back in with the coach, and there's an ongoing process there that would allow that person to ultimately become a better communicator.
We only have Art with us for a couple more minutes. So, Art, I thought I'd ask you if you have a final comment or question.
Thanks. And I know that we'll be speaking again next week about this as well, so I can hold off on some. I do echo what Catherine had mentioned earlier, that a lot of bullies really don't know what they're doing. They don't imagine what they're doing is hurtful. They can be conscious enough to understand that they may have a style that's forceful, or may have a sense that through the organization's behavior that they're trying to grow these leaders. But one of the things I did want to just sort of have people noodle about is about the fact that we're changing also as an industry to a certain extent, where, for example, there is increased emphasis now on crew resource management and the ability to think collaboratively on a major event or a medical event rather than trying to foster the I'm the leader and you're the follower mentality that's sort of been in the industry for quite some time and has led to some occasionally really bad outcomes with patient care. And that type of behavior can, I think, be somewhat related to concepts of harassment and bullying inside the classroom, where the instructors are trying to, harden the new recruit or that student so that they can think independently inside an emergency situation and sort of go with that train of thought. And it's possible that if we can have instructors recognize that there may be better outcomes associated with a collaborative crew resource management approach, that might percolate down throughout.
Great point.
Thanks, Art, for joining us. Having you back when we take on part two of this topic. Catherine, I'm curious about, like, maybe where do bullies end up going? Do bullies reform, or do they end up moving on to another workplace where, you know, their behaviors are tolerated or not? You know, they come in as an unknown and then they sort of remain there. Can a tiger change its stripes?
A couple of answers there. The first is that if a bully were to leave an organization and go somewhere else, absolutely, I think bullying is not always just about the bully and their lack of communication. Well, it's about the system. It's about the organization's culture. It's about how much leeway they're given in order to act like that. So they're bullying and they go to another organization where bullying seems to be okay, then yeah, they're going to continue to bully, I'm sure. But if they go to an organization where they immediately see that that kind of behavior is not tolerated, then I think that that would definitely help end it. So it really is about the organization that they go to. The other side of that, though, I want to say is that most of the time it's not the bully that leaves, it's the target. Targets are often seen as the problem, as I said earlier, and ultimately targets are often asked to leave, and they're fired or they're moved or they're transferred, but most of the time they're asked to leave or they leave on their own, they quit. So unfortunately, going back to what we were saying earlier, you know, a lot of human resources managers are completely unaware that bullying is a real thing, and therefore when a target comes and says, I'm being bullied or this is the way I'm being treated, that person is seen as the problem and they're the one who's asked to leave. So
I hadn't really considered the collateral damage before, and when you define bullying as not only negative or psychological damage to the target, but to the bystanders, and you know that could easily wash people out of an education program or out of a workplace.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of research that supports that. Even if you are just witnessing the behavior between Bob and Sue, and you know, and you see that Sue's really picking on Bob, Sue might not be picking on you at all, but you're going to go home at night and think, wow, that's Sue, she's pretty mean, and she makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me uncomfortable that that's happening in staff meetings, for example, and it bothers me that the managers aren't doing anything about it. So there's a lot of feelings that witnesses feel that, certainly, collateral damage is a great term.
And Catherine, what would be your recommendation? So how would an organization begin to say, hey, we might have a problem? and again, it could be an educational institution or just anything, someone begins to say, how do we know we're having a problem? What might be some of the hot indicators to the aware human resource manager, instructor coordinator, president of some company or something, that they may have a problem? What might be those things?
There's a couple of things there. Definitely taking employee grievances seriously when someone complains about the way they're being treated, not assuming that it's conflict or that that person's the weak link, you know, really taking in what they're saying and treating it like a sexual harassment complaint where you're doing an, you know, an investigation around that complaint. Also, exit interviews are a great way to find out what's happening in the organization. Certainly, you know, instructors are leaving. The human resources manager or instructor coordinator can have a conversation with them about what can we learn from your experiences here? What did you like about working here? What wasn't working well? What were the relationships like? Certainly, you would never want to say, is such and such a bully? But, you know, just asking about the relationships. And then looking at turnover rates around certain people. So if there's one person that there seems to be a lot of turnover right around that person or in that department specifically, certainly there's a lot of things it could be, but bullying is one of them. And then also, if you wanted to invest in that a little bit more, doing a communication audit or a climate audit or an employee satisfaction survey, one of those kinds of assessments on the organization would be a great way to find out what's happening in the organization, whether it's about bullying and all sorts of other topics. So those are great tools that organizations can use.
Catherine, what's your opinion on this approach? We, you know, I mentioned the intimidating instructor earlier. We had one instance where another instructor wasn't quite sure what to do and ended up going to their immediate supervisor. And rather than approach this intimidating instructor directly, they just organized a survey of the students to get their feedback on all of the instructors in that particular class, so they could have at least some written feedback from the students to confirm that the students actually felt that way. You know, we do this every semester anyway, but it was just the process was accelerated a little bit so they could get some documentation about that individual instructor. Do you recommend that? Does that sound like a reasonable approach?
Well, was that something they were doing that was out of their normal course of business, where they organized this survey beyond what normally happened in order to target that teacher? Is that what happened?
No, it's part of a routine every semester. The only difference was that normally they do it a little later in the semester. In this case, they just sped up the process a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be okay. As long what you don't want to do is organize something around the bully that the bully knows, where the bully is like, oh, they're organizing something around me. That's not going to bode well for the people who organize that. That will turn into accelerated, more aggressive bullying on them. But if that was a survey that's normally conducted, I would think that's fine. And actually, bring up a good point. One of the questions on your student surveys could certainly be around. You don't obviously don't want to say, was your teacher a bully, but, you know, around something that can get at the answer to that question.
Sure.
It sounds okay to me.
Yeah, what kind of questions would get at that question?
I would ask questions like, did you feel like your teacher respected you in your opinion? What was your relationship like with the instructor, you know, and then scale from positive to negative? You know, those kinds of questions.
Do you receive constructive feedback?
Mm-hmm. Right. So they'd be questions that are looking at that person's behavior, and then, you know, you would equate some of the student answers to whether or not that person's seen as a bully or not.
It's interesting Greg, when you first mentioned we were going to tackle this subject, my immediate reaction was something that Catherine described earlier. It was sort of kind of a bit of a disbelief, because I was really thinking about students bullying other students, and I thought, I've never seen that happen. I've never heard any students talk about that happening. So I did kind of an informal survey the students sort of talking one-on-one with them over the course of the week. And I was surprised at a couple of the responses. There's definitely, you know, some teasing that goes on and some cliques that form and some ostracizing that happens. No outright bullying that I could tell, but it really seems to be more the people who are in a position of authority who bully their subordinates. And where I have seen this happen, and we have had documented cases of it, is where students are put out in the field with preceptors, and some preceptors are very easygoing and nurturing, and others I really think completely unaware how bullyish or intimidating they can be with students. It just seems like an opportunity to kick butt.
Right. I think too, so what, some students. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I want you to describe as concise as you can, but with very descriptive terms, what do you think a bully really is? Because I know we're going to be carrying on this conversation more towards resolutions and solutions probably in part two of this. I'm more interested now getting back to me in my mind. What is minor bullying to outright, maybe a scale of this is a number one versus a number 10 type of bully?
Wow, that's a good question. I've not been asked that question before.
Remember,
remember,
there's no bullying scale.
right. Bullying is about verbal abuse, so shouting, calling people names, unhealthy sarcasm or sarcasm that's meant to be mean, communication that's aggressive, so body language that's aggressive, getting in someone's space, or sort of even chest bumping is something that we've seen before. Finger pointing. I worked with a client who this bully had ultimately stuck his finger right in his ear while he was talking to him as a way to really push him down. Abusing authority, so giving evaluations that are unfair. And, when you give a performance evaluation, there's the right way where you say, here's what I'm noticing you need to work on. Here are some goals. Here's how I think you can help fix this. Here are some resources for you, versus I'm just going to give you a poor evaluation because I don't like you and I want you to leave. Taking credit for work, gossiping about somebody, giving them assignments that are underneath their level of competence on a regular basis so that person feels useless, giving them assignments that are over their competence level so that they will purposely fail, sabotaging work. These are all examples. The big message, though, is that bullying is about perception, right? So you could have two people who work with the same person, and one person feels invigorated and challenged by the way that person is at work, and somebody else could go home absolutely torn apart by the way they're being treated. So there's that one aspect as well.
Catherine,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say I'm wondering if we could have just a little bit more of your time to sort of go around for each of us to ask one more question before we wrap up.
Sure.
Okay, my final question has to do with, the reason this got on my mind last fall was the young man, I believe, in New York, New Jersey area that committed suicide after what seemed to be bullying through Facebook. And it's obvious that that's happening with kids. Bullying through social networks or text messaging. What's in the workplace, I guess, with adults, how are social networks, is bullying becoming an around-the-clock feature, or does sort of bullying end at the end of the workday?
Absolutely. Technology makes bullying 24/7 a lot easier. So even with social networks or emailing, a lot of people are working, they clock out at work and then they go home and open their laptops and continue to take care of things that didn't get done that day at work. So the fact that a lot of companies give phones now, so absolutely technology, social networking, all of that stuff makes bullying a lot easier, a lot more prevalent, and it means that a target can't get away from the bully just because they've left the building.
And Right. And then, like, how you monitor that as an employer or as a educator, like, gets even more difficult, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are software programs out there that can monitor words that are used in emails and words that are used, you know, if it's a company-issued laptop, for example, things, you know, they can monitor what's happening on that laptop. So there's definitely software out there that can help help deal with that a little bit. But, you know, something like Facebook or any of these other social networks, if the bully wants to go home and get on their own computer and send an anonymous email or send an anonymous Facebook comment or what have you, then, you know, sad to say, but there's something stopping them, really.
Bill or Rob?
I have a question. I'm not sure, you know, we want to answer it now or maybe leave it as a teaser for the next episode of this, but my question would be, what happens if, as an instructor, you've been accused by a student of being a bully or being intimidated and falsely accused? How do you deal with that? Should we leave that for next week, or is that too long a question?
Well, Catherine's not scheduled to be back with us next week.
Oh. Okay, well.
Do you want me to answer that now?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. I would, if you're the instructor being accused of being a bully or acting inappropriately in class, I would definitely talk with your lead faculty or your instructor coordinator, whoever you're reporting to, and talk with them about the fact that you deserve some sort of an investigation where the lead instructor or HR, whoever it is, interviews both the student and you and would give you both the opportunity to separately talk about what's happened in your relationship and, you know, stay your side. And hopefully they would also look at previous evaluations from other students to see if other students are feeling that that's how you were or how you behave in class. So I would hope that your manager would give you the benefit of the doubt and work with you on it and talk with you and the student both about the scenario and find out what really happened.
And would an investigation typically involve speaking to other potential witnesses, other students, other faculty?
Sure, it could. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Bill?
Well, I just have found it fascinating, and I have a lot of calls, so I'm going to encourage Greg for us to find an opportunity for you to come on back on. So we really have an opportunity to go from, I think we did a lot of diagnosing. I'd be interested in us picking your brain a little bit more from your experience of how to resolve when an organization actually has identified that these things may exist. What are some steps that they could take to, you know, build an environment that would be more conducive, particularly in our case, for education and stuff? I've found this quite fascinating. It's made me very reflective, certainly from my early career to where I am now all these years later. And I know I was greatly influenced. I had gone to a private military school from grade 6 to 12. So I do have a little concept of the idea of hazing and bullying from firsthand experience.
Well, I'd be happy to share that with you. I've got a ton of ideas for you.
Well, Catherine, thanks so much for being on the show. We always like to wrap up with, I guess, giving you a chance for a final thought or something you want to share, and then I definitely want you to tell listeners where they can connect with you and we can get those links into the show notes.
Sure. The final comment is to a few different parties. One, if you are feeling like you're a target of workplace bullying or another instructor is bullying you or a student is bullying you, understand that the psychological damage, even if you're not realizing how much it's hurting you, is pretty severe and can be really severe. And so just remember to take care of you. And if you feel that you're not getting the help you need from a lead faculty or HR, then maybe leave is the best option for you. There are too many people that have let it get too far and let their depression get too bad where they can't deal with it, and it's hard for them to find another job. And then to any lead faculty out there who hears that somebody in their workplace is being bullied, you know, take that complaint seriously. Bullying is not conflict. It's not that those two people are having an interpersonal issue. Bullying is different. It's psychological abuse, and it deserves attention. And in terms of where you can find me, I have two websites. My company's website is civilitypartners.com, and that's where all my services and consulting and training programs are listed. I do offer two training programs for education, actually. I offer a dealing with difficult students in the classroom workshop, and also dealing with difficult students as customers workshop for staff within an educational institution. And then my workplace bullying website is workplacebullies.com, and that's where you'll find more information about bullying and what it is. There is an assessment there for an organization to take to kind of take a first look at whether or not there might be bullying, and also some worksheets on determining costs of bullying and that kind of thing. So definitely feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to answer any additional questions offline.
Well, thank you again, Catherine. It's really been fascinating, this conversation tonight. And like Bill, I've sort of been reflecting on maybe some of my experiences, maybe on both sides of this. It's always, when you start a conversation like this, you start thinking, wait, would I have been a bully in that situation, or did I go too far, or what was right or wrong? And so I really appreciate that opportunity and just the clarity of the definition you've given in this issue. Listeners, next week we're going to continue the conversation. Art Sia is scheduled to return, and then also another instructor that teaches in the Northeast EMS education. And I think we'll take some of this general conversation, workplace conversation, and keep narrowing our focus to the EMS classroom. And I just want to remind listeners that you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/EMSEducast. We're also on Twitter at EMSEducast. And the first week of March, I'll be at the EMS Today conference, joining some of our podcasting colleagues to broadcast live from the show floor at EMS Today. So if you're going to be there, please take a moment to introduce yourself. It'd be great to meet listeners in person. Thanks, everybody, for another excellent show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.